Any club that would have me as a member. By Gaudior. Read by Hananobira. Carcat. Auspisticize. You do not want to auspisticize. You particularly do not want to auspisticize for Eridon fucking Ampura, because you do not want to be in any quadrant with Eridon fucking Ampura ever. Because you have a half-functioning cell somewhere in your think pan, and that is more than enough to process Eridon plus quadrant equals run screaming as fast as your legs can take you. And yet, here you are, with one hand on his heaving chest, his face screwed up in a snarl like the one that shows up in your daymares, standing between him and the rattling roar of a chainsaw. You really don't want to auspisticize for Kanaya. You like Kanaya, always have. She's too kind to set your teeth on edge with spite, too sensible to make you scream with rage at her incompetence. There was just never anything there to feel black about. At least, not until this moment. Because apparently, you are the last 12 members of your race in existence is, somehow, not a good enough reason for her to realize that maybe you're all worth more alive than dead. Even you. Even Eridon fucking Ampura, who had better put down the fucking rifle before you shove it up his waist chute. No, for some reason, she's decided to ignore the decision you thought you all made together about bringing your friends back, and that day you pilot the meteor into your new universe, the second Roxy hands off the working matriarch, the instant that varied genetic contributions might make a difference to your future, that's the right time to ignore all the sins you ever imagined she might have and play whack-a-troll with one of the more self-centered and dangerous people left standing. "Arr," you growl. "You. Both so brain-dead that you have nothing better to do than replays? Seriously?" "Carcat," Kanaya shouts politely over the chainsaw. "Please step out of the way." You glare. "How about not? How about you think for half a second, you nook-sniffing, slurry-soaked fuckheads?" You step forward, right towards that fucking chainsaw, so close you can feel the wind of its blades on your face. But you don't look at it. Don't take your eyes off of hers, bright in her glowing white face. Kanaya, turn it off. Now. You'd like to think that she's swayed by your commanding presence, but that's past Carcat's delusion of grandeur. You're pretty sure she just doesn't want to get your mutant blood all over her skirt or her gears. She frowns prettily, and then everything goes quiet, chainsaw turned to lipstick with a pop of transformation. Now all you can hear is Eridon trying to pretend he's not hyperventilating behind you, your own heart thudding in your ears. She glares at him over your shoulder, and you are not having that. You don't even think about it before you're grabbing her by the frilly neck of her shirt. "Look at me, idiot. I'm talking to you, not that waste of breath back there." You think you hear Eridon complaining about that behind you, and you spare half a second's turn to snarl at him, "Don't start with me." "He killed the matriarch," Kanaya hisses. Her glow is so bright this close up. "He destroyed the only hope we had left. I'm not letting him do it again." "Aw, oh, for fuck's sake, Can. You think I didn't learn anything from all that time, Dad?" "And oh god, fucking hipster. He still thinks he can come out of this with dignity. Like he's put upon. Like he's the one in the right here. You cannot stand these shitheads. You cannot believe that out of all of the trolls in all of Alternia, this is what you end up with. This is your fucking pantheon. You didn't learn to shut the fuck up when I tell you to." "Oh, come on, Car." "No." You grab him with your other hand, holding them both still just through the force of your hatred. "Kanaya, you are not killing one of the only living trolls. I don't care what he did. You need his fucking genes. And what kind of squalling, festering jadeblood are you that doesn't occur to you?" You shake her, and some of the killing glow goes out of her, though she looks perfectly ready to argue, fucking pedant. "And Eridon, you have a kismesis. I don't care if Solix is a skinny, honey-smeared, husk-top accessory. He's yours. And if you think you two get to pollute every single dream bubble we come across with your terrible, shit-colored shared slurry and then step out on him, you're more clueless than I thought you were. Do you understand me?" They both start to complain, so you just shake them again. "Do you understand me?" They look at you. They look at each other. "It's not that easy," Kanaya says. "His genes won't compensate for genocide, and I don't see any sign that he's changed. Not like you gave me a chance or anything. Aridin sulks, but sulking is calmer than snarling. Not like you care enough to ask me whether I'm planning to do that kind of thing again, or whether maybe I had reasons before. What a possible reason! Hey! This time you shake them hard. Hard enough to rattle them, knock them into each other, and they try to jerk away, and you're just not letting them. You're going to calm down now, and you're going to stay calm, period. If I have to shake sense into you every single time from now until we die, you fucking bulge sores. Aridin puts a hand on your hand, where you've grabbed him by the fucking pretentious hipster scarf. You really mean that, Carr? He looks at you, and he has the audacity to fucking wink. You start. And then you look at your life, and your choices. You're standing there, one of them in each hand, both of them staring at you in some combination of annoyance and awe. You look exactly like Troll Julia Roberts in which a young blue blood, despite interference from a cast of zany conquered aliens and the strong objections of her intendeds, manages to fill her ashen quadrant, featuring three scenes of conciliation, one interrupted paling, two interrupted murders, and the disintegration of 53 alien extras. You've even got that classic auspicious smirk going. And it's true, you realize. These people piss you off so much that you can't imagine letting them go about killing each other without even noticing how much it annoys you. Fuckheads. So that's it. Ash at first fight. Fuck your life. Carcat, accept your new status with dignity and grace. Fucking Aridin, you growl again. You may have mentioned this a few times before. Shoosh, Gamzee offers, not looking like he expects it to be any more effective this time. He managed to get you into a pile of balloon animals and programming manuals in a comfortable corner of your shared room on the Meteor, where you're all camping out while you work on programming the new universe. I am calm, you say. Why wouldn't I be calm? Just because I'm now in charge of two people who have already both managed to kill each other and show no sign of learning anything from it except how very much fun it was and what a wonderful idea it would be to do it again? That's great! Gamzee looks faintly reproachful. Ain't it all up and be in a new world, best friend? I'd hate to think we all just as hot-headed and stone-cold as we was. You shrug, not wanting to trouble stillish waters. You already had your apocalypse. You had all kinds of reasons, which you and he have gone into, and they make as much sense to you as you think they can, for all that you need to take 15 steps off the path of rational thought just to start to follow the leaps of logic. Aridin just had being an insecure asshole with no fucking impulse control, which, guess what, he still has. And Kanaya, don't even ask me what's going on with her. Except that, oh hey, you do have to ask me, because now I'm the one who's going to be getting it out. John, perched on a contained wisp of the breeze, rolls his eyes. Geez, we know, Carcat, you said. He flips upside down, stupid godhood flapping underneath him. If you hate it this much, why don't you break up with them? You growl at him. This is what it's come to? This is the kind of joke my life has become? I've got John Egbert giving me advice on quadrants. Maybe I should test whether we can die or not. He laughs, because he's a wriggler panned simpleton, probably the god thereof. But seriously, Carcat, you're acting like this is destiny or something. It's not like you have to date them. I mean, you stopped Kanaya from killing Aridin, and that's great, but why do you think you'll have to keep doing it? Couldn't you let someone else auspicize them if you really don't want to? Auspisticize, you useless airhead. He ain't wrong, though, Gamzee says. It took some fast talking, but he seems to have accepted that a co-pal honcho is not the same thing as a moirail, though he'd probably be easier with it if John could ease off with the friend hugs. If it ain't what your blood pusher is singing to you, then it ain't. You wrap an arm around yourself and half shrug. Huh. Gamzee studies you, eyes half-lidded and puzzled. That ain't one of them real communicative sort of ums. You shrug away. I can't, you say. Who else would want to auspisticize those two lunatics? How many of us wouldn't just let Kanaya slice and dice Aridin? We wouldn't, John says. The humans, I mean. We're not going to let our nice new universe get all messed up with murder right away. Even if Aridin is kind of, well, a douche canoe. But that's not a reason to kill someone. Your aliens are so weird. You can't auspisticize everyone, just the eight of you. John does math in his head for a moment. No, we could. It wouldn't be that hard, actually. That's the quadrant where it's okay to have more than one, right? If we each took one of you in any combination, then there'd only be four of you who weren't covered, and the odds of the two who need to be auspisticized, both being among those four at any one time, are only about 11%, and probably one of us would be free to swap in those times. He grins. We got you. You do not, you snarl. It's not just a matter of telling people to be nice or you'll look at them with infant bark beast eyes. These are trolls you're talking about. They're more dangerous than you think. A quick huff of wind is all the warning you get before the breeze is bearing you up to John's level. Gamzee honks in angry dismay. Dude, John says, you think we're not? You roll your eyes and make stupid swimming motions through the air to get Gamzee and pap him before he takes too much exception to being airborne. I think you couldn't get up a good black ROM if your life depended on it, Egbert, or everyone else's. Besides, what happened to not being a homosexual? John shrugs and lets you down. It's platonic, right? Shut your stupid alien mouth before your entire human brain falls out of it, you say, because you have had enough of explaining quadrants to John Egbert. He shrugs, taking it as his due. He and Gamzee both fall silent, looking at you as you grumpily settle back down into the pile. You're not going to auspisticize Kanaya and Aridin, you tell him. You wouldn't know how. It's going to take technique, work, knowing them. They're not that simple. Aridin's a hot mess. God, he'd be pathetic if he weren't so convinced that he's right. And now that he's been lurking around as a ghost, he thinks he's had these huge fucking epiphanies, and he's more evolved, and it's exactly the same self-serving bullshit as when he was talking about killing all the land dwellers, but he won't admit it. He thinks he's grown as a person, which means he's going to think he's even more justified in whatever needy, self-important fuckwittery he comes up with. You grind your teeth. And Kanaya, God, don't get me started. How does someone so composed turn into such a raving nutjob just from being killed? I don't think she even understands what her being a rainbow drinker really means, and it's not like her tentacular human maidspread's going to actually know. Just because she's holding it together around everyone else doesn't mean she's ever going to have enough peace of mind near Aridin to forget about the hole he blew through her. And there's an image that just keeps running through your head whenever you're around the two of them. The spark of a wand, the squelch of innards, the smell of it, and the determination, burning cold and fierce, that you will not just stand there staring, not ever again. They're both acting like such thoughtless fucking wrigglers, and they're both better than that, if they would just think for half a second. But no, it's rifles and chainsaws all the way. Fuckheads. You look up after a moment of silence, and now John and Gamzee aren't looking at you at all. They're looking at each other, agreeing on some opinion that they haven't deigned to share. What? They hesitate. Then John just goes for it. Gee, Karkat, it sounds like you don't want to get out of this quadrant at all. Like, you've really got feelings for them. You are struck dumb by the stupidity. Gamzee takes this as a cue to put in his hopelessly cockeyed boat-propelling tool. True facts. Fuck your life so hard. Karkat, have more important things to deal with. Well, you do. You're still the leader of these hapless fuckwits, because Jane and John keep insisting for their own inscrutable human reasons that they don't want the job, and Feferi's done empressing. And you've got this entire new universe to design, now that John's reality-altering and Roxy's hacking have wrested control from the game and given you a shot at something not horribly disease-ridden and terrible. Which goes fine for a while, with Terezi and Rose's seeing letting you know when you're going horribly off track. Carefully, calmly, not letting yourselves fuck up too badly. That lasts approximately half a committee meeting. And you'll admit that if you ever find out who pointed Equius at that thrice-cursed human Robert's Rules of Order, genetic diversity be damned, you'll cull them yourself. Before Vriska declares it boring, steals the access codes, and goes off to make her own additions to the new universe. And then it's a free-for-all, everyone claiming an area for themselves and just making whatever the hell they feel like, whether or not it makes any fucking sense with what everyone else is doing. Even people like Tavros, who, probably just to make your life harder, actually did grow as a person while he was dead, so now he's all fucking assertive, which would be some kind of real-life miracle, but not when he's asserting what he wants instead of what you want. You suppose that the new creatures he's designing are interesting enough, and you'll agree that he and Nepeta are collaborating peacefully enough on designing the big predators, but still. So now, being the leader actually consists of running around cleaning up everyone else's messes, instead of getting to design anything yourself. All right, you're proud of the fact that everything in the new universe has color-changing blood. They're cold-blooded in cold climates, hot-blooded in hot ones, and they unconsciously adjust it to be more comfortable, or when their emotions shift. You're pleased with that, and you're pleased with the fact that Solix and Roxy both like it enough to make that part of the code pretty much unhackable, no matter how hard Equius and Aridin try. You think Equius mostly just keeps trying because he likes getting so apoplectically aroused by it anyway, but that is the Silicon Strider's problem, and emphatically not yours. Ew. You all still haven't decided whether you want to make up a new race of sentient beings, or just populate the place with your own offspring, although the frighteningly high rate of interspecies relationships is making those offspring seem less and less likely, unless you find some way to make crossbreeds, and there is plenty of debate about whether that's a good idea. It's one of those areas where no one's done anything to be too firmly on one side or the other. No one's actually started to program people. The humans have managed to avoid spawning. And of course, until the matriorbs properly gestated, there's not much that you all can do with the gallons of slurry everyone keeps producing, buckets or not. You're not sure what's going to happen there, but you're all right with everyone keeping the uneasy peace and just making clouds and fish and things. And, of course, no sooner are you stupid enough to think that, but it's wrecked five ways from fourth perigee. Golgotha's Terror responded to memo, "For fuck's sake, coordinate, you shitheads!" GT, I say, was anyone planning on warning us about the tsunamis? CG, what? GT, well, we were running around exploring on Artanuin, and all of a sudden there's a bally great wave, and it's entirely underwater. We had quite a time finding something to float on. Wrings water out of his shirt. AC, AC is too wet and upset to roleplay. Kitty face. Our poor little sand serpents. They'll drown. CG. Artanuin is the deserty one. What the fuck is it doing with its tsunami? GT. So far, mostly splashing. GC. It's not just Artanuin. Baruka wood has gotten wetter by about 1,000-fold. It was surprising. GG. Is that 1,000-fold or 4,000-fold? GC. It is way too much for the forests. That's how much it is. Frowny face. TT. Actually, all the planets we've created now seem to be covered in oceans. CG. What the shit? What is the point of making all the planets oceans? We already have an oceany planet. What are we going to do with 10 of them? CG. What? What, no one's going to make a joke about that? CG. Good. CG. All right, which of you Nookstains is doing this? CC. Well, not me. CC. And I hate to say it, but I can only think of one other person who would benefit. CC. Mermaid face. CG. Oh, fucking hell. CG. All right, I will go talk with him. And by talk, I am pretty sure I mean beat the living shit out of with his stupid fucking rifle. But we'll see. Feferi, get Solix moving on undoing this. Tell him to wake up Roxy if he has to. I don't care if it's her off shift. CG. Rose, make sure the damn matriarch is safe and dry. CG. But maybe you could not tell your mate Sprit why right away. TT. You're right. That is one of the options available to me. CG. Oh, God, suck my bulge. TT. As is that, I suppose.
CG.
As definitely, just try not to fuck anything up while I'm gone. Carcinogeneticist has signed off. Carcat. Hurry. All right, you're hurrying. Because if you don't get to him before she does, and she realizes that he put the Matriorb at risk again, you're going to be out of quadrant pretty damn quickly. You're going to assume he just wasn't thinking about that. You'd like to assume he just wasn't thinking at all, but you know him better than that. He's got a plan. You would bet boonbucks on it. And it's a terrible plan, and he is so proud of it you could just spit. You call Jade, and it's not awkward at all, because you have a reason to call her. Space powers are still the best way of figuring out where in your new universe someone is and getting there fast. And it's not got nothing to do with any incredibly awkward dates that may or may not have happened last perigee. So that makes things a little easier. She sends you off to what used to be a perfectly nice mountainous planet, which is now an ocean with rocky little islands sticking out here and there, slippery with melting snow and ice. You decapsulog a motorized watercraft and head in the direction Jade pointed out, cutting the engine rocking on a perfectly unmarked bit of ocean, just like all the rest of them all over the planet. You don't know if he's paying attention to what's going on at the surface of the water, which is why you borrowed some of Riska's explosives before you left. It's not a very large bomb you drop over the side. Probably won't even singe him, what with him being underwater and all. It falls in with a plop, and there's a whoosh of compressed air rising to the surface, and then there's a what the hell, car, of soaked and bedraggled hipster, glaring at you with water droplets all over his stupid glasses. That's my question, you growl. What are you thinking, you useless, empty-panned, self-centered excuse for a get back up here when I'm yelling at you? Your crab top pings. Caligula's Aquarium, CA, began trolling carcinogeneticist, CG. CA. Why do you expect I'm gonna just swim up there and listen to you, bitch, car? CA. What am I supposed to get out of that? CG. Oh, I don't know. Maybe half a clue? Like about the fact that you can't just go drowning everyone else's worlds without them being just a little bit annoyed. Like about the fact that there might be some repercussions for this sort of shit, you idiot. C.A. Dot, dot, dot. C.A. It's not like they were taking any of my suggestions seriously anyway. C.A. Everyone else just goes off and does whatever the hell they want, but I'm supposed to be held up to some kind of different standard. C.A. What's the deal with that? C.G. Everyone else isn't going around destroying other people's work. Well, Equius sometimes, but I don't think that's on purpose. CG. Is that the standard you're talking about being held to? Is that the thing that's so unbelievably difficult to do that it's beyond your capacities? CA. Oh, fuck off, car. CA. Like you even care what my capacities are. CG. What's that supposed to mean? CA. Just that you're no different from the rest of them. CA. You flat-out propositioned me, Ash, but you can't even be bothered to come do some mediating up close and personal. C.A. So caught up in being the leader of the entire fucking universe that you think you can just let your quadrants rot. C.A. Like we're going to be so grateful to be solicited once that that's all you got to do to keep us in line. C.A. Fuck that. C.G. Are you saying that you flooded nine planets and drowned every land-dwelling creature, plant, geographical feature, and city just to black flirt, Eridan? CG. With me? CA. Aw, can. CG. Fuckhead. CG. You did remember that this could drown the Matriorb. CA. Of course I did. I'm not an idiot. CA. No matter what you all think. CG. We don't think you're an idiot, you idiot. We know how smart you are. CG. That's why it's so bulge-chafingly frustrating that you don't spend a single ounce of that strategic cleverness on giving half a thought to how other people feel about what you do. CG. What's up with that? CA. I know how you're all going to feel about this. CA. You're going to whine and carp and complain about how I'm totally out of control and crazy and deserve to die for it. CA. And never even ask yourselves whether I had reasons. CA. Or the right to it. CA. Because you all want to pretend that the hemospectrum's a useless bunch of nonsense we left behind us in our old universe. CA. And you look at me and Eck like we're so utterly despicable and beneath all of ya. CA. Like just because Feff and Gams don't care about centuries of tradition, it wasn't there for a reason. CA. And it didn't mean anything, and it's got nothing good or noble or worth keeping to it. CA. And you don't care even a little bit about the fact that we care about it and how it makes us feel to see you cast it away without even thinking. CA. Because you think we're crazy and depraved and too dumb to even think about whether we might have a point. CA. Like it doesn't matter at all whether we are happy in your new color-shifting blood universe. CA. That was real cute, Carr. CA. Way to just spit in my face there. CA. Did you give half a thought to how I was going to feel about that? CA. Or did you just figure it didn't matter what a crazy genocidal sea dweller wanted? CG. I... CG. Oh, fuck, Aridin. You're right. I knew it would make you miserable, and I did it anyway. CG. And I don't want to make you miserable. CG. But Gigas, if we kept the hemocast system, I should be dead. And so should all the humans. CA. Nah, I mean, it's a new universe. It's not a mutation if half of everyone's got it. CA. We could just fit red bloods right under rust bloods. CA. We're not going to call you, Carr. What do you take us for? CG. Well, at the moment, I take you for a guy who brought about his own personal reckoning to an entire solar system because he didn't think much of land dwellers. CG. So you tell me, Nookwipe. CA. The solar system's fine. CA. It's got plenty of space for all the fish and whales and seaweed anyone could ever want. CG. Oh, suffering human saints of patience! CG. I have to call on them because you have used up every single ounce of tolerance any troll deity might ever have managed to secrete from their most swollen, putting-up-with-this-shit glands. CG. Aridin, you unbelievable waste of my breath. CG. Sigh. CG. Look. CG. The hemocasts were really good to you. You had your ancestor and his history and a purpose and reasons to be noble and to feel good about yourself. You knew where you fit in the world, and you knew that you had inherent skills and talents that would keep you there and let you go out and conquer and be respected for it. CG. And you lose all of that when you're stuck with us because it seems like we just threw all that away out of envy and resentment. CG. That's how you feel, right? With a splash, the lightning bolt horns break the surface of the water, followed by the rest of Aridin's head. He meets your eyes, reluctant, uneasy. Right, you say? He shrugs, his whole arms coming out of the water with a movement. More or less, he admits. But if you know that, why aren't you acting like it? And the thing is, you have to actually say this next part out loud because he doesn't know it. And you could almost pity him for that, except for the way it just taints and ruins everything about him that could be strong and actually noble, and that makes you grind your teeth, even as you try to say it straightforwardly. Because you can understand someone without agreeing with them. He frowns at you. Yeah, of course, he says. But you can tell that he's just responding to your tone of voice, that he understands that you just said something you think someone would have to be pan-fried not to understand, and so there's not a chance he's going to let on that he doesn't. Fuck your life forever. You're going to try to explain this now, aren't you? Like, you say, even though you don't agree with me about making the blood color shift, you know why I did it, right? He glares at you, but there's something just lost in his eyes, and Christing sufferer. You cannot stand the sight of him, the way he's just broken right down the middle, well before Kanaya cut him in half. So obnoxious, the way he doesn't know.
Because you don't like the hemospectrum, he says. Obviously.
Right, you say, and push one more step. Do you know why I don't like the hemospectrum? He leans back in the waves, flips the wet scarf over his shoulder with an impatient sigh. Because you're a mutant, he drawls, so you don't get to be on it. And then there's that little flickering glance at you to see if he's right, because he doesn't know. Stupid, broken, defective grub. Why are you wasting my time with this, Carr?
You rub your eyes.
I don't even know. Because what are you thinking? Do you think you're going to fix him? Do you think that he even wants to be fixed? Or that he'd admit it if he did? Because I can't auspisticize between you and every single troll alive. And I wouldn't have to if you could just understand this shit. He sniffs. So much for not thinking I'm an idiot.
You have had enough.
Well, about this, you fucking are, Aridin. I don't like the hemospectrum because I don't get to be on it. Seriously? Not because maybe I might have some feelings about the hemocasts, meaning that I should have been culled before I even got out of the brooding caverns. Not because it meant I spent my entire life hiding in my house in case someone found out my blood color. Not because I always knew I could never do anything worthwhile for no other reason than that. None of that occurred to you? He gives you a withering look of scorn. Or you think that's what it's meant to be, anyway. But you swear his eyes are violet-tinged, tear-wet, not just water-wet. Why bother? You've got it all memorized perfectly well. I'd hate to interrupt the performance. You look at him, and where flushed feelings would burn and black ones scorch, ash just crumbles. You hate this about him. You hate it so much. But you don't hate him, not all of him. Just this. Just this one part of him. The part that takes someone who could actually be brave and dashing and everything he wants to be and makes him into a lonely, bitter, uncontrollable freak. Who has no one to stop him because he can't pity a Moiril, not really. He couldn't understand them well enough to pity them. Who can't pity a Maidsprit because he can't value someone else more than himself. Not enough to want to preserve their essence because he knows they won't be able to protect themselves forever. Who can barely hang on to a Kismesitude with Solix, and only because his erraticness is balanced by Solix's obsessive need for order, and because Solix isn't going to give up on hating the person who blinded him and killed his Maidsprit. But who knows what'll happen if and when it really sinks in for Solix that he can see fine, that his Maidsprit is alive and well, and that he has more interesting things to think about than a prancing poser who will never really understand their differences enough to use them as a balance. He could be so much more than this, except for this one stupid, stupid fucking thing that holds him back, and that he won't even think about letting go of. Fuckhead. You reach out of the boat to thwack him upside the head. Not hard enough to knock him underwater, but hard enough to sting. Classic auspicious flirting. Listen to me, you say, and there's pure gray love in your voice, pure ashen hate, so deep it surprises you. Everyone is not ignoring you, you self-important shithead. They're interested in their own stuff. They're not trying to spite you. They'd be perfectly happy to look at something you come up with if you showed it to them, like everyone else is doing, with the birds and mountains and chronology and so forth, which you could have fucking tried instead of just making everyone look at you by trying to destroy everything, including the future of our species. Again, very creative there. Good job. He glares at you. What's the point of having trolls without the hemocast? It's what we are. Without it, why not just let the humans take over the new universe? What's the difference? Excellent question, you growl. Really intriguing subject of a debate. Why don't you fucking fix what you broke, and then we can all go back to the meteor and talk about it instead of you deciding on your own? He grumbles. But that's the moment that the problem's taken out of his hands, because Solix and Roxy seem to have figured out how to change the code, and the ocean disappears. Not just recedes, it actually vanishes. And you hear the ding
That tells you Dave and Aradia have folded the past hour into a second as far as your planets are concerned, undrowning all the wildlife in the process. Of course, that means that you, your boat, and your fucking quadrant mate, bereft of water, are now floating in the air miles above the ground. Aradin lets out a truly indignant squawk and claws for the boat, right as you capsulog it and decapsulog the rocket and step aboard. You reach out, grab his flailing arm, and there's a moment when he's suspended above the rocky crevice below, looking up at you. So gray. Everything you feel for him. Gray is your skin. Gray is the sky here. Gotcha, you say. I'm not letting you die, fuckstick. He rolls his eyes. Some auspicious you'd be if you did, he says. But his hand clamps tight around your wrist as you haul him up onto the rocket with you, claws digging into your skin a little. Because he might hate you for seeing the parts of him that ruin him, but he's not letting go. Karkat, attend to the other lobe of your club. Artanuin is restored, not a sign of the waves that covered it half an hour ago. You've deposited Aradin in your room on the meteor, with firm orders to sit the fuck still and think about what he's done, and a very complicated lock on the door. You shuffle through the sand, panting under the new, non-toxic sun. You're gambling that Kanaya will stay with the orb until she's sure it's fine, and that that'll give you enough time to get to her. You're a little worried about the timing, though. It turns out you didn't have to be. She's sitting next to the gestating orb, legs crossed under her skirt, frowning. The cave is gently lit by her glow, flickering over the sandy floor when she moves, and she doesn't look up when you stumble through the entranceway. Rose said you thought she'd agree not to tell me things. A breath. And that you were worried about me. You shrug. Not that she sees it. Yeah. As you can see, she says, I'm fine. Good, you say. Are you going to stay that way? She still doesn't look at you, but her voice gets pointed, fangier. I don't know, Karkat. Do you think that someone is going to destroy the future of our species again? Because I think then I might be something other than fine. You thump down next to her, suddenly just tired of the whole thing. God damn it, Kanaya. You realize that you should have something else to say, something full of properly, auspiciously sparks and venom, but you can't summon the energy. Why does she have to be like this? She catches your mood, looks over at you for the first time. That was human understatement, she offers, an apology. Dave suggested that I might want to diversify my rhetoric. That doesn't help. Kanaya, you say. Because she's your friend. You can talk to her about this sort of thing. I don't like hating you. She goes still. Do you want to stop being quadranted with me? No, you say immediately. And then think about it further. You wouldn't dream of breaking up her and Rose. You have a Moirail, and if you liked hating her, you wouldn't have this problem in the first place. And you don't need an auspicious of your own right now, for all her reputed prowess. It's not that. I just get sick of you pulling this extremist shit. You're better than this. You know it. She reaches out to pet the orb, running gentle fingers over its pliant spikes. Thank you, Karkat. I'm Ash for you, too. You grumble, not sure how you feel about that. Yeah? Which is just so romantic. Great job, you. You are the smoothest. She hesitates, then reaches out and punches you in the arm, hard enough to bruise. How could I not be? You are my friend, and now here you are, pointing out my failings and my irrationality. Your judgment is too good for me to dismiss you, but I can't stop wanting to wipe that self-centered, pretentious, genocidal coward. Thank you. Off the face of the planet. Whichever planet, I don't care. She shivers. This lobe of the club is weird. I always picture myself as the auspicious. I knew in theory that I could feel black, but the reality is so... She looks down, her glow flickering. Intense. Powerful. Horribly, horribly freeing. I don't like how much I like it.
You sigh. Not sure if you'll ever get to feel like that. But that's not really the point right now. Are you seriously complaining about being a normal, healthy troll? Is that what I'm hearing right now?
She rolls her eyes at you. I thought you were worried about my perverse rainbow drinker bloodlusts.
You stumble over your own assumptions.
Fuck, I don't know. I guess you're... Well, why are you so determined to kill him then?
His winning personality. But she pauses, thinks about it.
I liked killing him. I was so surprised by how much I liked it. It felt very, very good. I guess I want to know whether it would feel the same way again.
That is an unbelievably fucked up piece of nonsense, you explain. Even if it does, what are you going to do with that information? There's only 22 of us left. Do you want to keep killing people?
No, she says. Just him.
You press the point.
Even if it did feel that good to kill him again, awful as he is, I don't like the idea of you hurting him that much just for you to enjoy it. That's not you. You were saving all our lives last time. This would just be murder for fun.
Yes, she says, and there's a glimmer of longing in her eyes. Then she sighs, letting go.
But you won't let me do it, will you?
A world of fuck no. She nods.
And deep down, I know that I would be less if you did let me. I know that. But I can't stop myself.
She meets your eyes, face shining, full of the sweetest hate you've ever seen.
Not without you.
You swallow. I'll stop you, you promise. I won't let that happen, Kanaya. I won't let you do something we'd regret like that. I'll stop you.
You punch her, her arm no more yielding than the stone walls around you.
Always.
That is very annoying of you, she says, soft and sharp and sincere. You have no right to stop me.
I'm your auspistus, you say. I have all the rights.
She sniffs. If you say so.
Karkat, keep auspisticizing. You suppose you'd better if you're stuck with these two losers. Which you seem to be. Kanaya wants to stay in the cave for a while, so you head back to the meteor to let Eridan out of your room. Well, after you deal with the fact that he's taken the opportunity of being left there to draw huge purple ocean waves all over the maps of your worlds you keep on the walls. You irredeemable shit stain, you say. You're supposed to piss off Kanaya, not me. He smirks at you.
I've got no idea what you mean, he says. You said I should share my creations with all of you.
You thwap him on the arm, and he snaps and preens. Shut your mouth, you tell him. Please, I'm begging you. Just stop talking. I swear, I will pay you, I will tell you fish puns, I will invent new kinds of gemstones for you to put on your ridiculously overwrought neckpiece. If you will stop saying stupid fucking shit.
He raises an eyebrow.
Something bothering you, Carr? Your face, you say. Because you are too tired to come up with something clever. Get out, Eridan. I'm not your Lucis.
His face falls.
Oh, well, guess I may as well. He heads towards the door, pauses in the doorway. Comes back on Artanuin, right? Thinks she wants some company? You put a hand over your eyes. Oh, dear Cancer Frog of creation. If you were any more transparent, we could use you as a viewing port. I am not ditching you two, okay? I still hate you. I'm just tired.
Yeah?
Eridan fucking Ampora, in your quadrants. God, what did you do that was so wrong you got stuck with this insecure, hopeless loser? Surely even you don't deserve this. You march up to him, reach up. And who said he had permission to get this tall? And haul him down by the fucking scarf, his eyes wide behind his glasses, just inches from yours. Eridan fucking Ampora, I've been spending all day dealing with your shit, and I swear to everything anyone has ever held holy, if you do one more thing tonight, I will break into your hive and feed your hair gel to the cuttlefish.
I will set your husk top to do nothing but show you a constant loop of human con air. I will rip out your thoracic struts and eat your bile gland and shrink all your skinny jeans. You glare into his eyes and he gulps. I cannot stand one more second of your conceited, contrary, horribly confused bullshit tonight. My think pan will literally explode. Are we clear on this? He snarls, and there's something so obnoxiously satisfied about it. Can't take a joke at all, can you? You growl, shove him away toward the door. He adjusts his scarf, sniffs, and departs. You sigh, sit down at your desk, and find yourself going over your phrasing and smiling. You spend so much time yelling at people, there's something odd about realizing you finally found two who appreciate it. Carcat, get trolled. Grim Exiliatrix began trolling Carcinogeneticist. Carcinogeneticist is idle. GA. I am sorry, Carcat. GA. But this cannot continue. GA. It's just not responsible of me to leave this danger out there. GA. So I've asked Eridan to meet me on Sherrydale. GA. On the landing plane. GA. This evening at sunset. GA. So that we may settle this once and for all. GA. Please do not interfere. GA. This is how it needs to happen. GA. I apologize for wasting your time. Grim Exiliatrix is idle. Carcinogeneticist is no longer idle. CG. Yeah, yeah. Hate face to you too. Well, fuck that. You cross your arms over your chest and stare, because Gamzee's not much for formality, like how Dirk's not much for facial expressions, and so you've never been asked out on an actual date before. You've thought about it, maybe once or twice. Where would you go? What would you say? Would you wear, you know, something different? Do you own any clothing that would make you look any better? Enough to make up for the stupid tiny horns and the stupid scowly face and... Yeah, okay, maybe thinking about it isn't the most useful thing you ever do. Possibly. Except that it is now, because here you are, and Kanaya just asked you out, and if anyone was ever going to notice the defects in your sartorial sense... Not that you have to look particularly good for someone in a conciliatory quadrant. It's all about quelling bloodlust, not inciting it. Not that you think you could particularly do that, as has been made remarkably apparent by your utter failure in any concupiscent quadrant of any kind. And the fact that you seem to believe for some reason that this quadrant would be any different is obviously just your own inherent denial of the reality which is staring you in the face with the fact that you have been asked out on a real date, a really real date for real, and you have no idea what the fuck to even think about, you idiotic, arrogant excuse for a... pap. You jump, because you had forgotten Gamzee was there. Not that you jump very far, not with his big hand on your face. What's the what, best friend? He looks over your shoulder at your screen and turns to smirk in your direction. Gnarg, you explain. He seems to disagree. You all up and trying to overthink this, ain't you? He says, and paps you again. That makes it really hard to think, you complain. He sighs. Nah, I reckon you're thinking just fine. It's the worrying that sends it all slantwise. You growl, and it does not come out as a purr. It doesn't. Oh, so you want me to calmly go fuck everything up forever and get everyone killed again? Is that what you think is a better idea? He shrugs. Shoosh. You don't want to shoosh. But it's important, you say. What if I can't do it? What if they... And all you can remember is Kanaya's blood pooling under her corpse, Pfeffery glass-eyed on the horn pile, Solix sliding down the wall, the smell of ozone and offal, and just standing there, frozen, watching everything turn to shit so fast you can't even believe it's happening, can't even move to stop it because it's already happened, just fucking staring. Shoosh, Gamzee murmurs. And if there's a reddish smear on his hand on your face, you're going to assume that it's some new kind of makeup, because damn it. This is a new universe, remember? You ain't gonna let that happen again. You shake your head. But, hey, Gamzee says. And then he's turned around to face you, big lazy eyes strangely focused. Karkat, it ain't like they don't want you to stop them. It's not like they ain't scared of what would happen if you wasn't there.
Hoofbeast shit!
He looks wounded. Best friend, do you think I'd be up and settling down for anyone but you? You got the knowing of it.
He seems to think that meant something.
What? He tries again. The knowing of how it could be, if we was different from what we are. You know? You glare in comprehension. If we was something better. Ain't no one got the knowing of that like you do. Not the humans. They ain't never seen how bad it can be. And none of us. Just you. You look at your Moirel, think about everything he came back from. Think about how you can try as hard as you want, but you can't actually tell yourself that it would have happened if you hadn't been there. So, well. You sigh. All right, fine. Don't strain yourself, you colossal clown mess. You take a deep breath. Get your hands off me. I've got a date to get ready for. Karkat. Find your place in the club. The landing plane on Sherrydale is pretty enough at sunset, you have to admit. All right, gorgeous. It's apparently based on something on Earth somewhere. Golden grasses blowing in a gentle salt-smelling breeze, white cliffs leading down to a rhythmic crashing surf. The sky is bright, orange and pink clouds surrounding the sun sinking down into the ocean, perfectly backlighting Kanaya's dusky dress, glinting off of Aridin's rings. They're facing off, faces twisted in snarls, and you don't think you're imagining the tiny quivers of relief when you land between them. What the fuck is wrong with you people? Aridin waves his wand. She won't back off. She doesn't care what I've been through. All she cares about is her stupid revenge. Again! Kanaya hasn't even gotten her chainsaw out yet. She's still just shining and snarling. Nothing has changed about him. You see it, Karkat? He's no different from how he ever was. He's no less a threat. And Gamzee was right. It is easy when you let yourself. He fucking well is, you say, because I'm standing right here. And to him, and God, he really does look ridiculous when he snarls. And she knows she'd have to go through me to get to you, revenge or not. They circle you, and your pulse speeds up, but they're keeping you between them. Sit the fuck down, you horrible, impulsive assholes. Aridin growls. Why? You hold up the picnic hamper and wave it at them threateningly. Because otherwise, neither of you get to eat any of the dinner I spent minutes slaving over a hot purifier to make. Sit down. Now. Aridin looks half-tempted. Kanaya doesn't. I'm a jadeblood, she hisses. I protect the mother grub in all her forms. Her enemies are my prey, rightfully. Pan-squished, cast-bound fanatic. You pan-squished, cast-bound fanatic, you say, so long as you're having a confession scene here and getting everything out in the open. Shoot munching grub fodder. You sound just like him. They both turn to you, too shocked to keep their attention on each other. I do not sound like him, Kanaya says, utterly offended. Do I? You roll your eyes. Yes, yes you do. Next you'll be waving your fucking scarf around, see if you don't. She glares at you, and if she's amused, she's not admitting it. Not out loud, anyway. He has no such feeling. That was uncalled for, Carr. She wishes she were high caste enough to have half a chance to sound like me. Shut, you suggest. Up. This is what I'm talking about. Do you know what? I don't give a minuscule smear of shit what color your blood is, either of you. Kanaya, you're a jade blood? Fine, then be a jade blood, and shut up your fucking instincts for just the half a second it'll take you to actually think about what kind of new race you want to raise. Aridin, you want to be a high blood? Fine, be a high blood. Be aristocratic and long-lived and strong and fucking well earn that respect that you want everyone to give you instead of spending all of your time whining about not getting it. And the two of you just...
You pause for breath, but not really to think about what to say, because the words are coming, easy as standing here with them. Just stop trying to go back and relive the past. This is a new universe, you understand me? Do you understand what that word means? No. It means that we have a fucking chance to do better. And I don't care if you're not comfortable with that, either of you. I don't care how scary all of this has been, and I don't care how much you want to be in control of what happens next, you're not. And I'm going to make sure that what we do with this universe is as unfucked as it can possibly be, and if either of you gets in my way, I am going to set fire to your wardrobe afire. This is a new fucking universe, and you will fucking well overcome your fears and your instincts if I need to throttle you both. Biology is not fucking destiny. We write biology here. Got it? They blink at you. I'm not scared, Aridin says. I am, Kanaya says. She steps back, arranges the skirt of her dress neatly, and sits on the grass. This is a very big universe we have here, and we have not done well in the past at working together. Aridin sniffs. Well, if you think you can't do it, I don't see anything wrong with you sitting back and letting someone else. You go up and thwop him upside the head. Not you, Nookwipe. Not just you, anyway. And give him a look. Does he want to challenge your authority here? Does he want to question you? For half a moment, you're worried that he does, and you don't know how sickle kind would work against rifle kind, and if you need to find out. But then he sighs, put upon and persecuted, and sinks to the ground, wrinkling his nose at the grass crackling underneath him. They're both sitting there glaring at you, and you spread out a blanket and a food surface covering cloth between them, and let yourself look smug. That's right, you say. You two are just hopeless. Let someone with half a bit of sense deal with you. You wonder for a moment, are they going to accept that? Are you someone with half a bit of sense? Do they think so? Aridin's so headstrong, and Kanaya's always been the one to give you advice. Who do you think you are to try to hold them like this? And then you see them settle, tension going out of their shoulders. The heat fades from their glares, and there's something soft there, gray and gently crumbling. And light, almost weightless. You know it won't last. The slightest puff of disruption will blow it away, and you'll have to do this all over again. But you'll be there then, too. There to curb the flame. There to keep them both safe. You let out a breath that you've been holding ever since the meteor. All right, then, you say to your quadrant mates. Eat your dinners. And shut up. They won't. Well, they'll eat, and they'll even like it. But they won't stop sniping at each other. Irritating bastards. That's all right, too. The end.